IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines. Hamas says Israel's attack on Al Amal Hospital in Gaza is yet another act of war crime committed by the regime. The Yemeni army says that it has carried out a new attack against an American vessel in the Red Sea. And Iran pledges a decisive response to any attack on its soil. And interest amid U.S. retaliation threats over a weekend drone strike on its base in Jordan. Hello and welcome, everybody. The Palestinian Red Crescent in Gaza says Israeli forces have stormed Al Amal Hospital in the southern city of Khan Yunis, where displaced people are taking shelter. The Palestinian Red Crescent says Israeli forces also asked the people inside the hospital to evacuate. It says one civilian was killed after troops besieged the complex. Hamas has called the attack a new act of massacre and war crime committed by Israel. Separately, the regime's airstrike hit a residential building in the central Gaza city of Deir al-Balah, killing at least 11 people, including several kids. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza says the death toll has reached 26,900 since the war began in early October. Most of those killed are women and children. Nearly 66,000 Palestinians have been injured as well. Our correspondent, Moti Abu Mosabe, joined us earlier from central Gaza city of Deir al-Balah to tell us more about the situation in the war-ravaged besieged strip.
Actually, it's 117 consecutive days passed, and the Israeli occupation forces are still hitting Gaza strip mercilessly. All areas of Gaza strip were under brutal Israeli attacks over the last night. Here in Deir al-Balah city, the Israeli occupation forces committed an appalling massacre after destroying a residential building in Deir al-Balah city, claiming the lives of at least 11 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children. And as you can see here behind me, here is the scene as the people are gathering these moments in order to bid farewell to those Palestinian martyrs and to mourn them to their last destination. In addition to that, inside Gaza city, the Israeli occupation forces intensified their attacks against the residential buildings and the residential squares there, where dozens of the Palestinian civilians were killed. And the dead bodies of those Palestinian civilians actually were seen scattered in the streets as the Palestinian ambulances were unable to reach them over the continuous and the constant Israeli shelling and the constant Israeli gunfire of the Israeli tanks located and concentrated near the Ashifa complex, preventing the people and preventing the medical staff from moving inside the city.
People in Gaza are outraged and concerned over the decision by some countries to cut funding to the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees that has been assisting over 5 million Palestinians across the region. Our Gaza correspondent has talked to some of the Gazans about the impact of the decision on their lives. Let's take a listen.
Many Palestinian families depend mainly on the aid provided by UNRWA. If they are going to cut them off, then poverty will prevail, and we will face multiple aftermath. Without any doubt, this is an unfair decision, and nothing justifies it, especially in these catastrophic conditions caused by the continuous Israeli war on Gaza.
The entire people of Gaza became refugees due to this Israeli aggression on Gaza. 2.3 million people in Gaza today have no food. How could they manage to survive? How could they feed their children? The US and Britain joined the Israeli forces in this war, and they are complicit in the Israeli crimes. It is not the first time they talk about severing the UNRWA aid. This is consistent with the Israeli agenda.
As you can see, we are devastated. We lost everything. My five-floor building was flattened. My sons were killed. I am the only survivor of my family. The UNRWA is obliged to assist us. We are waiting for any help. We are not waiting from the Western countries to fight us by taking this decision. How come do they take this decision amid this aggression?
The situation in Gaza's hospitals are getting worse day by day as the Israeli regime keeps pounding the territory. A few functioning hospitals are now facing shortages of equipment, medicines, and staff. Doctors say they're struggling to provide proper care to the patients and the wounded people.
We are now working in an environment that has become an ineffective environment for health work, an environment that allows the spread of infection among patients. As we see, there is an acute shortage of equipment, medicines, and medical personnel.
Currently at the Nasser Medical Complex, and due to the siege imposed on us, there's a huge shortage in many things. Medical tools, gauze, which may use more than once. We also have a shortage of medical sterilization trays, and we use the same tray for more than one thing. We also do the sterilization process ourselves. There's no special place for that.
Our number as doctors here at the emergency is no more than five or six doctors. Each one of us is literally handling 10 cases at the same time. And unfortunately, by the time we are done with the cases we already have, injured people who arrive sadly die before we get to them. When I was called to the emergency for work, I found my best friend laying on the floor right in front of the resuscitation unit, unable to find a bed. I immediately started doing CPR, but sadly he passed away. And that's all because of our lack and shortage of doctors, medical staff, and inability to receive more cases as the hospital is way beyond full capacity.
Several UN agencies have warned about the catastrophic consequences of a decision by some countries to cut funding to the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA. In a joint statement, the heads of multiple UN bodies described the halt of UNRWA funding as perilous, cautioning that it will lead to the collapse of the humanitarian system in Gaza. The group said such a collapse will have far-reaching humanitarian and human rights consequences in the occupied Palestinian territory and across the region. Earlier, the UN Aid Coordinator for Gaza stressed the great capacity of UNRWA in delivering and distributing aid across the strip. Zigrid Cog said no other organization can replace or substitute UNRWA, considering the agency's ability and its knowledge of the population in Gaza. Political commentator Scott Bennett joined us earlier from San Francisco with his take on the catastrophic consequences of a decision by certain countries to cut funding to the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees. Let's take a listen.
That's Israel's strategy, is to create this black hole of misery that it can then use to detach itself and distract the world from when it does some other operations, which may include attacks on Lebanon and stuff. But the second thing it shows us is it's a perfect opportunity for the other world's nations to step in to the vacuum that UNRWA's suspension has created and provide the water, the bread, the food, the medicine, the tents, the sleeping bags, the children's toys, provides the basic necessities from Russia, Iran, Turkey, China, Saudi Arabia, maybe one of the other, Indonesia, any of the general nations that have ships or have a passion can play a role in a humanitarian mission to Gaza that I've said is the best and the only thing that'll save the Palestinians, because it's an external rescue operation. And the world has done this after World War II and the Marshall Plan, when the West dropped food over in the parts of Germany that have been cut off. The same thing needs to happen now. And this creates an opportunity, and it mandates that it be done, because the Israelis are now consciously cutting off all nutrients, food, medicine. They're going into hospitals, pretending they're women, and killing people. So that's the most important thing to understand, that the absolute misery agenda and strategy that Israel is going to follow unless they're stopped, and then the only way to stop them is really through an alternative to UNRWA, through other nations coming together. And it would be a spectacle to behold if they did it in a naval armada way. And I think it would be one of the most miraculous things that we've ever seen in this century.
The Israeli military has confirmed the death of three more of its soldiers in the Gaza Strip, where Palestinian fighters keep putting stiff resistance to invading regime forces. The Israeli military said one of its troops was killed in northern Gaza, and the other two were killed in the southern part of the strip on Tuesday. It also acknowledged that five soldiers were seriously injured in the battles on the ground. Regime has confirmed the death of over 220 of its soldiers since the start of the ground invasion of Gaza. However, Palestinian resistance groups say the actual number of casualties among Israeli forces is much higher, and the regime is covering up its losses, fearing further Israeli public anger. They also say resistance fighters have destroyed nearly 1,000 Israeli military vehicles, inflicting heavy losses on the regime. And the Yemeni army says it has carried out yet another operation against an American vessel in the Red Sea following a string of similar attacks over the past weeks. In a statement, the Yemeni army said its naval forces fired several appropriate missiles at destroyer USS Gravely in the Red Sea. It said the Yemeni armed forces will continue targeting American and British warships in the Red and Arabian Seas. The Yemeni army says these operations are in response to the aggression against Yemen, and in solidarity with Palestinians, the U.S. and Britain have conducted a number of aerial strikes on Yemen with the aim to protect Israel's maritime interests. Sana'a says Yemeni military operations will continue unless Israel stops its war on Gaza and ends the siege of the Palestinian territory. Yemeni forces have targeted over two dozen Israeli-run or Israeli-bound vessels in the Red Sea. Geopolitical analyst Ryan Dawson joined us earlier from Seoul to explain why resistance movements in the West Asian region are up against the Israeli regime.
Yemen has had a significant economic impact on the shipping to Israel. You have to understand, the longer they invade Gaza, the more able-bodied young men that used to be working a productive job are now killing children instead, so they're not contributing to the economy. Then when you block the Red Sea, and they haven't killed anybody, they've just been seizing ships and goods going to Israel, it forced America to show its hand, because America has targeted and attacked Yemen sites, all for Israeli interests. It's not in America's interest to free up the Red Sea, and Yemen has every right to block military and any other kind of aid going to a regime that is involved in ethnic cleansing and genocide. In the north, you have several groups, Hezbollah being probably, if not the strongest, the one that is most active. Taking out tanks, taking out radar, taking out targets in the north, and proving that a little tit for tat with Israel, the more you go up the escalation ladder, the more Hezbollah will go up the escalation ladder. And then you have bases in Iraq and Syria being attacked as well by those resistance groups, bases that are there that were not invited. Iraq already voted to remove the United States, and Syria never agreed with their presence there in Al-Tanfadir, Azor, or anywhere else.
Iraq's resistance group Kataib Hezbollah says it has suspended all its military and security operations against U.S. forces across the region. The resistance group said in a statement that the decision is aimed at taking into consideration the political affairs of the Iraqi government. Kataib Hezbollah, however, said that it will continue to defend Palestinians in the Gaza Strip through other means. The group also warned that it will make a decision if the U.S. conducts any hostile act. Over the past several months, Iraqi resistance forces have launched almost daily attacks on the U.S. bases in Iraq and Syria. The forces have said the attacks are in retaliation for Washington's support for Israel's onslaught on Gaza. The Iraqi resistance groups are also outraged at the U.S. presence in the region, which they see as a source of instability. Iran's permanent representative and ambassador to the United Nations has warned that the Islamic Republic would decisively respond to any attack on the country, its interests, and nationals. Amir Saidi Ravani said it's the fundamental policy of Iran to give a strong response to enemies in case of an attack. The statement came after U.S. President Joe Biden told reporters that he has made a decision on how to respond to Sunday's deadly drone attack on the American base in Jordan. Biden did not blame Iran for the attack, but said he holds Tehran responsible for supplying weapons to the group that had claimed responsibility for the attack. Iran has already denied its involvement, calling the U.S. accusation baseless. Iran says resistance forces in the region are not under its control and therefore is not responsible for their actions. Iran and Pakistan have vowed to jointly fight the common threat of terrorism. The announcement signals efforts to rebuild ties following missile attacks on each other's border regions. Kisumi Shahmari has more.
Dear brother,
vowing to fight the common threat of terrorism and reiterating their commitment to improving bilateral relations, Iran and Pakistan are back on the right track to boost ties following tit-for-tat missile attacks on each other's border regions, where terrorist separatist groups have been active.
We are saying this loud and clear for the terrorists to listen carefully. Iran and Pakistan will not allow terrorists to create insecurity in the region. Make no mistake, we are one nation in two different geographical areas, and both sides strongly respect each other's territorial integrity.
In Islamabad, in response to his Pakistani counterpart's official invitation, Hossein Amir Abdullahian discussed ways to fight against the terrorists based along the Iran-Pakistan border areas that are, in his words, supported by hostile third countries. Many Iranian and Pakistani forces have lost their lives in recent years in the fight against terrorism, and over the past 2 weeks, both Iran and Pakistan inevitably launched missile attacks on each other's soil in order to contain the terrorist separatist groups, a move that created a media frenzy. And now this official visit is clearing things out.
You need to understand that in the last 70 years or so, Pakistan and Iran have developed a robust cooperation between themselves. We have strong people-to-people contacts. We have religious ties. We have historical ties. We have cultural ties between our two countries. And these ties are extremely important for our two countries to have a common security and common development, peace and prosperity for each other. I think the important thing for us is that there is a strong sentiment in Pakistan that peace and prosperity and security of Iran is something which is extremely important for Pakistan and for the region. And we have very strong reason to believe that Iran is also motivated by the same sentiment.
Views that were reiterated by Pakistan's Chief of Army Staff, General Sayed Asim Munir, as well as Pakistan's Prime Minister, Anwar ul Haq Kakar, who urged joint efforts, more coordination, and intelligence sharing to fight terrorism as a common threat to both countries, while also extending an official invitation for the Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi to travel to Islamabad. Iran and Pakistan are turning a new page, and the Iranian foreign minister's trip to Islamabad is a sign that both sides are adamant in expanding their bilateral relations. Kisumi Shahmadi, Islamabad.
That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
2 months.
Yani?
32.
Bazaar.
If you look around, nearly every object you see is made of raw material extracted from a mine. Basically, if you can't grow it, you have to mine it. The extraction of minerals, metals, and fuels from the ground is one of humankind's oldest industries. Never more than now has society been so dependent on greater variety and larger volumes of mined products. So it's no surprise that mining fuels our modern world and makes economies grow. Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. I'm your host Alireza Ikhtiarzadeh, and this week we will be exploring the mining industry while shining the spotlight on the machinery used in this sector. We wanted to see what types of machines are used and who is actively manufacturing them. Plus, we wanted to understand why the mining sector is crucial to the national economy and how manufacturers contribute to its progress. So, let's roll out the show. Our quest for answers led us to Shahrud city in Semnan province, where we visited a company specializing in manufacturing various mining machines. With nearly 20 years of experience, this knowledge-based company is active in a host of fields. It conducts research, development, and production of equipment needed in various industries. That being said, it also manufactures a variety of excavating, drilling, trenching, and digging machines. The life of any product begins in the design room. This company has researched and developed these machines and has perfected their performance. Optimizing the machine size, speed, and power to carry out tasks has also reduced the expenses related to projects where these machines are used. These machines can be used in agriculture and road maintenance, among other medium-scale construction projects. Most materials needed to make these machines can be purchased inside Iran. Steel sheets, gears, wires, and whatever else is required to build the machine can be domestically found. And if a design requires a particular part, this company can make its own molds to create the parts. You might find it interesting that these machines are currently imported, as there is a high demand among mining companies for equipment. So, indigenizing the production of mining machines has been a big step towards supporting this sector. Another benefit to local production is it saves the country millions by cutting back on imports. The beating heart of this knowledge-based company is its research and development department. Here is where all the magic happens. This area employs some of the most talented and experienced specialists to research, design products, and optimize existing ones. But that's not all. The research and development department also studies future projects. This company also dabbles in making equipment used to harness renewable energy. This company not only uses its own expert staff, but also stays up to date on the latest knowledge by maintaining links with the Industrial University of Shahrud. It collaborates with academic institutions and exchanges knowledge with them too. Furthermore, this knowledge firm also uses capacities and resources made available by Semnan Tech Park. Among its services, it offers the execution of projects through contracting. For example, it has used its machines to complete piping and installation of telecommunications manholes for intercity networks. Another example is carving drainage systems in agricultural fields using its trenchers. Over the years, this company has made a variety of award-winning machines, such as drilling machines equipped with fiber optic lights. Moreover, this company has invented 6 products that have been internationally patented. This knowledge-based manufacturer has never stopped eyeing the future and has plans to expand its production units and product portfolio in the coming years.
The company we just mentioned is part of the puzzle that helps Iran's mining sector thrive. It is one of Iran's key industries, as the country is one of the top 10 mineral-rich nations globally. Roughly 7% of global mineral reserves can be found in Iran, making it one of the most important mineral producers in the world. Numbers from Iran's Trade Promotion Organization show that last year the sector saw a growth in exports. Government officials, however, say export figures could still be much higher. Furthermore, efforts have been placed on encouraging research and production in knowledge-based firms to increase specialized production, such as mining machines, in the market. And here is where knowledge-based companies play a big role. Okay, time for me to take a little break from here and divert your attention to a report that I made earlier in the week. Welcome to another special feature of Bazaar. Today, we are discussing energy production, specifically electricity production through gas turbines and some of the problems that come with it. So, at different times of the year, mainly during the summer, we get sporadic blackouts at peak hours, at one of the peak hours, let's say around 12 at noon until 4 to 5 p.m. Because we cannot store electricity, electricity production must always match electricity consumption. But because of the temperature during these hours, during this time of the year, during the summer, temperature, high temperatures in particular, negatively affect electricity production through gas turbines. So first we're going to take a look at, well, why that is and how gas turbines work. But and also, we believe that we have found a solution at Sharif Innovation Center, in one of the companies that has made that solution, and we're going to check that out too. Why do high temperatures negatively affect the performance of a gas turbine? Well, bear with me as I try to explain how a gas turbine works through this prototype that they have here. This is the prototype of the device that would be used at scale. This is not at scale. So this is, imagine this is the gas turbine. How it works is that it sucks air through these air ducts, and the temperature of that air is very important. I'm going to get back to that. The air goes through a compressor here. The compressor compresses the air, which we would need the compressed air for the combustion chamber. A combustion chamber essentially makes this work exactly like a plane engine or a car engine. A car engine is slightly different because the movement that it produces is linear, whereas the plane engine has rotary movement. So that's exactly what it is like, because it produces rotary movement. So in the combustion chamber, we add a certain type of gas to the compressed air, and then a little spark creates an explosion, and the explosion, the high pressure air, would then spin our turbines. And the turbines, which have movement in them, are connected to a generator, and the generator's job is to create, is to turn movement into electricity, which goes through the power grid and then gets to whoever needs it. Now, the thing here, the important thing about the air temperature is that we need ideal conditions, ideally, for the machine to work at peak performance. And that ideal condition is at sea level 15 degrees Celsius. So the air, ideally, is 15 degrees Celsius. But we don't get that kind of temperature in a lot of places, especially in a hot and dry climate. So we have a couple of options to alleviate that problem. Number one, the inefficient option, is to work the compressor a lot more, which would use a lot more energy, but that's not even the issue. The issue is that there's a lot easier of a way. So what they have found at TEPCO company is that they have instead tried to use an ice storage unit to work as a thermal storage compartment, because you know the thermal storage capacity of ice is 100 times more than that of the water. So here they create ice essentially at midnight until the morning when no one is using the power and the air is colder, because that is what happens. The difference between temperatures during the day and temperatures during the night in dry climates is pretty massive. So it's a lot easier to create the ice during that time. So they do that so that in the morning or at noon during peak hours, 12 p.m. to like 4 or 5 p.m., they have the ice to cool the water that is in the storage, and the cooled water goes through a radiator behind the air duct so that the air, the probably hot air that comes through the chamber, is cooled using the water that is in the ice storage compartment. That water cools the air down to like 15 degrees and gives us ideal conditions to work with, so the compressor doesn't need to work that hard. We get our ideal conditions through the ice storage unit, and that is how they are able to offset the amount of electricity that we would lose if we were to use the compressor a lot harder. And that's pretty much how a gas turbine works as well, but also this is the innovation here. A better way to cool the air and get a gas turbine to work at peak performance. There are other less efficient methods of cooling the water that comes through the chamber. Both of them are called evaporative cooling. The first type is done through a wet media, most likely a cooling pad that you see in water coolers everywhere. So how it works is that there's a lot of surface and they run water through it, and the air is going to go through this cooling pad. So as the air goes through the cooling pad, the water absorbs the heat from the air and evaporates. Evaporation is an endothermic procedure, which is heat absorbing, which means that the heat is absorbed from the air and transferred to the water, which evaporates, making the air that runs through the cooling pad a lot cooler. This is a rather wasteful method because, well, you're using water, because in the method that I showed you, you don't use water. The water is just circulated back into the system. This one, you use water, and it's just generally not that efficient. The other method is even more inefficient. You see it in a lot of places in like outdoors restaurants. They spray water through the air that is going to go through the chamber, and the extremely tiny water droplets absorb the heat from the air and evaporate as they are sprayed. This also absorbs heat from the air, and that is why when you go through the spray of water, you feel a cool breeze, because the air is a lot cooler, because its heat is transferred to the water molecules. So both of these methods are pretty inefficient, and I just wanted you to know about other methods that are used, but they are definitely more inefficient. And this chart is a demonstration of how our thermal storage system would perform in an actual 400 megawatt hour power plant system. When the ice is getting used during in midday, it bumps up the production by a difference of 60 megawatts in a regular 400 megawatt hour power plant. All right, now it's time for me to take a little break here and hand it over to my good friend out in the field, who's prepared a report for us.
In ancient Iran, felt was already used in the production of numerous kinds of clothing, bed clothes, floor carpets, and different kinds of sacks. In fact, the Iranian world may have been an important center for the development of felt technology. In the modern world today, felt or namat has found its way to industries of all kinds in various forms.
'You just can't imagine how crowded this place is. Whenever I want to talk on the phone, I have to find a sign-up place to be able to talk to you. It's really crazy.
God, in today's chaotic society, stress is an issue that many of us suffer from every day. But what matters most is trying to find distress sources and try to find effective solutions. For this reason, today I'm here to tell you that I finally found a startup, a new innovative company that has finally found a solution to this disastrous problem. I won't tell you any further. Let's just go and check it out.
Phil
Telt, or so-called Namat, is the acoustic solution for rowdy places to absorb and decrease undesirable noises. The aim is to provide sound serenity and to improve physical, mental, and psychological health. Namat Studio's scope of work is based on designing and manufacturing products. Recently, it has also played a significant role in different projects like some innovation centers in Asia and Africa. This company has focused on designing and building acoustic products. Generally in Iran, there is no specific competitor in this field. However, there are some groups in America and Northern Europe that are engaged with Felt.
If I want to tell you about a history about how our company established, it goes back to 3 years ago when Diva was chosen to renovate the innovation factory of Iran, that was the biggest one in the time. And the designer tried to make the offices and they tried to design a place that the people be comfortable, have a good place to work. That's why we understand that we have some advantages and disadvantages. One of the disadvantages is about the sound pollution that we had in the this area, that places were noisy and the employees didn't like that. That's why we try to use special materials for control this sound pollution. And we reached the felt material and we try to use this material.
Designing acoustic and movable working stations with the aim of recycling old products and reuse them in different functions. What is worth noticing about this business is the fact that the problem-solution method is based upon three WH questions: why, how, and what. Why is to define the problem, how is the process towards the solution, and what is the final product and prototype. These acoustic solutions were combined with architecture in various parts of the space and played the role in sound insulation and creating a silent space.
All right, now I want to walk you through some of the major products that are made of felt. The first piece we have here is an artwork that is made of wool felt that acts as a sound-absorbing material, not only as an aesthetic material that you can put it in your home place, but also as a sound-absorbing material. There is this phone booth. If I get inside, I can feel the private space and how the atmosphere really changes. It improves the acoustic vibes and reduces the reverberation when I get inside. And there's this whole thing, we call it desk divider. It's actually one of the main products in this company. People and employees put it in their on their desk to divide their own workplace with the person right next to them.
We have three different kind of material that we use on our works that absorb undesirable sounds, which are wool panels, or the other name is felt, and in Persian we say namat, and thermofelt and carpet. And the felt are in two kind of industrial felt and the natural felt. Natural felt is made by wools, and industrial material is made by a process by the battles and pet materials. They have different color patterns and thicknesses. The thicknesses are from 3 millimeter to 50 millimeter. And about the thermofelt, we have this material that we can use for more absorption. It has three kind of material with polyester, jeans, and heavy traffic, and it's very good for absorbing. And the last one is the carpet that is heavy traffic that we use in heavy traffic places such as the offices, and it can be cleaned very easy by the vacuum cleaner.
And As I mentioned earlier, this idea was created based on the concept of recreating, recycling, and revitalizing the surrounding substances and generalizing this idea to the upcoming products with different potentials. Such small-scale products are intended to improve the mental and physical health of users. And finally, creating a comfortable, inviting atmosphere.
Just like this linear lighting, almost everything here is made of felt. Based on environmental psychology, this linear lighting has been created in a way to provide maximum visual and acoustic comfort in the workplace, especially a co-working space like this. This company, Namad Startup, has been trying to promote sustainability and also take steps towards industrialization. Among all the products here, there were so many things, but I decided to choose felt laptop case to carry my laptop with me wherever I go. So it's not about the ideas, it's about making the ideas happen. I'm in Sarah Dema.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for tuning in. It's bye for now.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن
by means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى و دین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. کتاب الله.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, my dear friends from all around the world. You're listening to IRIB English Radio, The Keys of Life. And this is Asma. First thing first, I'm no religious scholar, therefore all we're going to do in here is to go through every chapter of the famous fruitful book of Mafatih al-Hayat. That literally means the keys of life. Well, in this journey, we'd learn things all by each other. So previously on the keys of life, we talked about contemplation. Well, in the first chapter of this very important and interesting book, we understood that thinking and contemplation has got an important role in our life. So as Muslims, we have been recommended to contemplate upon every single thing that happens in our life, whether it be natural incidents or the catastrophes or whatever that happens in our life has got a reason. So we have to think about it, because through this thinking, we are going to get into a grown-up and a mature person has got a different way of thinking. So through these contemplation, we get into an evolved version of ourselves that we never thought we could get to. Well, as the second part of this chapter, we're going to go through simplicity. The thing which is so important is to avoid the ostensible show of, you know, the phoniness and the flashiness. You have seen it in your life that there are some friends that, maybe they're rich, maybe they have too much and they want to show off. They just hold these gatherings that is so flashy and that's got so much of things in it. But then the thing is that the quality is very much important, and it has got nothing to do with the quantity of the things that you have in your life. Sometimes we get to have too much of things. We actually go through too much of troubles. We do too much of hardships in order to achieve something that is very much trivial. But we have it in our Islamic heritage that we should not go for too much of, for an excessive amount of effort for things that are unnecessary. There's also another aspect that you should have it in your mind. Do not bother yourself. We have it in the Holy Book of Quran that God says it to his obedience that إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُرِيدُ بِكُمُ الْيُسْرُ وَلَا يُرِيدُ بِكُمُ الْعُسْرُ. Well, this is one of the recommendations of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam that we have always heard it from the greatest scholars, that God does not want us to go through troubles and hardships. All he wants for us is easiness. So we should not impose on ourselves an amount of hardship and difficulty that is not recommended for us. For praying, for example, God has never asked us to go through too much of prayings, like to cross the mountains, to get at the top of the mountain, like what we see in some ancient mystic stories, like they were like a kind of people who went through too much of oceans, too much of seas, too much of mountains to get into a special situation in which they could get closer to God and then talk to him in a specific manner. Well, we have it in our religion is simply put like this. You, in order to get close to Allah, you don't have to go through too much of trouble. It's just a process of thinking. You go dip and dip in your contemplation. And then through prayers, again, that have been mentioned to you to be easy, pretty much easy, and in a style that we have learned from Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. The Prophet says, in your life, in all aspects, try to be so moderate. If you're going to invite your friends and your family for a gathering, do not go through too much of trouble. Do not bother yourself, because that's not recommended. And that's not what you have been created for. The Prophet ﷺ says, I do not like people who go through too much of difficulties and problem for whatever they do. Like for people who actually try to create these flashy gatherings, they spend too much of money, they do too much of things. Of course, you have seen such people in front of you, you know. There are some people who do everything excessively. If it's about invitations or gatherings, they do it excessively in a way that actually makes you forget about the main idea that is the gathering. It's more of a show. It's more of a phony show. And then it's not just like gathering for the sake of gathering and meeting people. Well, here's the thing about being too obsessive in these sort of things. But then I would tell that to you after the break. So let's go for a break and then I'll be back in a blink of an eye.
آیت الله جوادی آملی, the author of the book مفاتیح الحیات, the keys of life.
این مفاتیح باید دو جلد باشه. چندین سال این حرف گفته میشه.
This book, مفاتیح, ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتیح الجنان است. چه فرون دماز و سواب داره فرون روزوان است.
One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اینه که فرون درختکاری اینجا کم سواب داره. دعا هم داره, سواب هم داره.
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام همونطوری که این رو گفته برم گفته دی. اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری سواب داره, همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اونقدر سواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Well, welcome back to the Keys of Life. You're listening to Asma, and this is IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam. Well, yes, we were talking about moderation and getting away from all the display and showing off sort of stories. Well, we said that the Prophet says, أَنِّي لَا أُحِبُّ الْمُتَكَلِّفِينَ. That is, I did not like the people who go through too much of difficulties and they just try to show off and they try to overdo everything. So this is very important. I wanted to tell you something. Well, we all have met this kind of people who when you befriend them, you do not feel like at home. It's very important that in your relationships, try to be so moderate. Also, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, the best way of living is to live simply away from all these showing offs and difficulties that might just entangle you with too much of trouble. So just be as moderate and simple as you have been recommended to in our Islamic heritage and narrations. Also, we have it from Imam Ali alayhi salam, who says to his son that, my son, there are two types of blessings that you could get in your life. The one that you go after it. For the one that it comes after you, make sure that even if you do not go toward it, it's going to come to you. So do not worry a lot about it. Leave all the worries and all the sadnesses of the future aside, because the things that are going to happen will happen for you. Of course, there are some details and different aspects to this saying, but then I'm just going to make it clear as much as the time would leave me. You know, when they say do not think about the troubles and the problems and do not engage yourself with too much of worries, that does not mean that you should not think about your life. They too much recommend you, I mean Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam generally, recommend you to think too much about your life, about how to improve yourself, about how to be a more respectful person. But then they ask you to stay away from all the worries, to stay away from the things that would deviate you from the main idea of life, from the main purpose of life and creation. That is to be a truthful obedient of Allah. Well, this was all the time that we had for today's episode. I hope you just enjoyed it. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams.
hear the children's cries.
That was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
To my enemy, and I cry out, cry out, cry out to the evil enemy. The flame within my heart will burn you. I cry out, and the thunder in my voice will deafen you. I cry. Tornado within my soul will blow you away. My bleeding wound once felt, though soon forgotten, but the aching sorrow in never gone. I raise it with my anger and love, love of my land, anger at your deeds. I raise it with my anger and love, love of my land, anger at your deeds. Wounded by hatred, I'm breathing, breathing, breathing the magic perfume of my homeland, Palestine. Wounded in love, my hands turn around the branches of the olive. Seeking peace, seeking peace.
This is IRI.